Welcome to the All Things Nintendo Podcast. I'm Brian Shea from Game Informer, and this is a weekly podcast to discuss all the biggest news and games from the world of Nintendo. After a relaxing long weekend away in the mountains of Pennsylvania, I am back to cover all the news that we missed from last week's show, plus get a review of Xenoblade Chronicles 3, the new RPG that just hit Switch today. And to do that and more, I am happy to welcome back Associate Editor at Game Informer, Jay Guisal. Jay, how are you doing today?
Hey, I'm happy to be here. It's been a little while. I know, back.
It's been a minute. When was the last show that you were on?
The last one I was on was Nintendo Switch Sports.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. We're actually going to talk a little Nintendo Switch Sports today, so that's actually good that you're coming back. So last week, we answered some listener questions and had Andrew Reiner on to talk about Live Alive. But this week, we're back with a timely episode, and we're actually going to cover all the news that we missed from last week as well. But thankfully, it's not going to drag too long, because I think that like this week and last week combined kind of makes one busy singular week. So this should be kind of just like a slightly longer news segment, even though we're covering 2 weeks of information. But we're going to dive right in. First up, as I mentioned, we talked about listener questions, and one of those listener questions was, which characters would be coming to Mario Strikers Battle League? So naturally, Nintendo took that opportunity to completely undermine that segment and reveal the first characters coming to the game. And first up, the character that we predicted, Andrew Reiner and I predicted, would be coming to the game, Daisy. She arrived in the game last week, and I don't know why, but Nintendo tweeted out a video of her Hyper Strike shot. And people were very, we'll say, out of pocket in the replies. just some very weird responses, very thirsty responses.
Unreal.
yeah, I think it all stems back to the fact that you know, she does a little bit of a butt bump with the ball. Okay. And I think that kind of broke some people's brains. But we also got Shy Guy in this free update, and I will say there was not as much horniness in the reaction to him. But yeah, have you had a chance to play Mario Strikers Battle League yet?
I haven't, but I remember Statnik talking a lot about how he enjoyed it.
Yeah, he enjoyed it, but he also was like, there's not a ton of content here, so I'm glad they're adding new characters. And they did say, like, when they announced, like, oh, we're going to be giving all these free updates, they did say it's not just going to be characters. And as such, we also, in this free update, got a new gear set called Knight and a new stadium called Desert Ruin. I also have not checked out Mario Strikers Battle League yet, and that is largely because of Alex Stadnik saying, like, you know, it's a fun game. There's just not a whole lot to it. Sure. So I'm kind of waiting for the content to arrive. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a series that I've always really wanted to play more of. I played a little bit of it at a friend's house, like back on, like, I forget which Mario Strikers game it was. But it was one of the games, obviously not one of the recent ones, because there were no recent ones. But it was one of the ones from like Wii or GameCube. And I remember I had a good time with it, but I never actually owned a Mario Strikers game. So this was the one I was like, I kind of had circled on my list. Like, all right, this is the one I'm going to pick up. I'm sure it's going to be great. And then Alex was kind of lukewarm on it, so I haven't had a chance to check it out. I haven't really gone out of my way to check it out. But maybe if they add a little bit more content, we get like a Nintendo sale, which is usually like $5 off. Maybe that'll be enough to entice me to take the dive. But right now, I'm just not feeling all that enticed to jump in.
Fair enough. Yeah.
But something that I am often enticed by is the next piece of news, which is Nintendo adding three new games to the NES and SNES libraries for Switch Online subscribers. This has been an incredible way for people to kind of experience games that they never played. Like, I subscribe to this because the Switch Online, because I love the classic games that I grew up playing. Mm-hmm. You know, I love firing up Super Mario World when I'm on a plane, or I like going back and playing through Legend of Zelda: Link to the Past. The mainstays are the main reason I do this, but similar to like Netflix, I subscribe for Stranger Things, I subscribe for Umbrella Academy,
right?
But then every once in a while, this thing will pop up on my recommended, and I'll be like, oh, this looks interesting. I had no idea about this. And then I'll check it out and I'll love it. And that's what I think this update is all about. It's it's games that I didn't really have on my radar, but ones that I might check out because I'm already paying for it. Why not? So we got two games on the SNES side. Fighter's History, which is a 2D fighting game that looks very much in the vein of Street Fighter 2, but maybe not quite as polished as Street Fighter 2. And then Kirby's Avalanche, which was a game that was only released in Western markets. Mm. And it's like Puyo Puyo style puzzle game. And then, but it's starring, of course, Kirby. And then on the NES side, we got a game I've never heard of in my life called Diva 6 Imperial of Nersartia. And it is a 2D side-scrolling shooter game. Yeah, I did not expect that. I thought it was going to be like an RPG or something.
Me too. That's what I guessed.
With a name like that, you expect it to be like some Square Enix nonsense. But do any of these strike your fancy? Are you a Puyo Puyo guy?
No, not really.
No, not at all.
No, not at all. Not really. I am interested in a little bit in that last game that you mentioned, just because kind of threw me for a loop there. I really did think that was going to be like some super like unknown JRPG.
Yeah.
So.
No, it looks like you're like kind of like a Contra style game,
okay.
But not with like that. It looked more like sci-fi than like kind of John Rambo.
Gotcha.
But yeah, none of these are really my jam, but I'll probably check them out again because like I like checking out some of these games that I completely missed when I was growing up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what this Switch Online thing is great for, is these classic games catalogs are amazing for giving us insight into games we just never even had on our radars. And right. It's like, yeah, why not? It's basically free to me. That's the advantage that Switch Online has over the virtual console. Is that like virtual console, everything was a separate transaction. So it's like if a game popped up on the virtual console you never heard of, you're like, oh, ignore that one. But this one, it's like, oh, it's already on my Switch. Right. Might as well.
Oh, yeah.
Do you find yourself going to any of these catalogs more than the others? Or are there any games that you like playing? Or do you even have a Switch Online subscription?
I don't think I have a Switch Online.
So that answers that question. What is the game that would drive, like, what would drive you to get a Switch Online subscription? I think I asked, I forget who it was. It might have been Alex Stadnick. Then I asked him, like, what would it take to upgrade to the expansion pack? What would it take for you to subscribe to Switch Online? Like, would it be a certain game? Would it be a certain system, classic catalog that, like, you'd want to get added? Would it be other benefits?
So just remind me, so for Switch Online, are there like, just specific consoles? Like games that they put on there, or can I like imagine like Wii U games or something?
So for the standard Switch Online subscription, which is $20 a year,
sure. Oh,
you
wow.
get online access, and then you get NES and SNES catalogs.
Gotcha.
And then if you upgrade to the expansion pack, which I believe is $50 a year, they add the Sega Genesis and N64 catalogs plus access to other expansions. So you get like the Animal Crossing New Horizons expansion, you get the Mario Kart 8 Deluxe expansion, and you get the Splatoon 2 expansion. So that's what you get for the upgrade to $50 a year instead of $20 a year. But you also get the SNES and NES catalog plus the online access, all the stuff of the base model or the base subscription you get in the expansion pack as well. And so what would it take for you to subscribe to either one of those?
Gosh, man, I missed out like on a lot of those consoles in general and like the games that are on them. I feel like, I mean, this is kind of like a crazy dream, but like if there was a way that there could be like Wii U games on there and I could try out Twilight Princess for the first time, that would be really cool.
Dude, I've got to think they're going to put that just right on Switch. Like that's
dude, I hope
be
so.
I think
it's
that's
gotta be.
Like with Breath of the Wild sequel getting delayed, like I feel like we're weeks away from Twilight Princess HD and Wind Waker HD getting a holiday 2022 announcement.
That's what I feel too. Like I was talking to my friend about it because she really wants me to play Twilight Princess because I think I said it last time, I missed out on a lot of Nintendo games. And so, you know, Breath of the Wild and Super Mario Odyssey, those are like my first introductions to those classic franchises. But you know, she was telling me that like there are characters in Twilight Princess that I would love, and that there's sort of like this darker, more mature aesthetic that I'd probably appreciate. I don't know, it just sounds really cool. I remember the craze like surrounding it back when it first came out, but you know, like I said, I kind of glossed over a lot of like the Nintendo consoles, so I don't know. I mean, like I said, like it would be really cool to just be able to play like an HD version of that. And I'm sorry if that's like if that doesn't specifically answer the question you asked, but basically it'd be a dream. It'd be a dream if they just suddenly announced it like this year. And it sounds plausible. That sounds like a thing that would happen this year.
I mean, I think that Twilight Princess and Wind Waker HD are shoo-ins to come to Switch at some point, probably in the next year and a half. If Nintendo sometimes has concerns, and I remember I asked them about this when I was at a demo for A Link Between Worlds back on 3DS. I said, hey, like it would make a lot of sense for you guys to put A Link to the Past on 3DS, since this is kind of like a sequel to that. And that way people can play both of these games. And they said, oh, well, we're actually concerned. I mean, this was a Nintendo spokesperson. This was not, or like a Nintendo PR person. So I don't know if they had any insight into actual like Nintendo's policy, but they said like, oh, well, we think that that would actually like cannibalize the sales of A Link Between Worlds. So I don't know if Nintendo has changed their thoughts on that, if that was just kind of like one employee's impression or what, but like, that seems so backwards. But it also would explain that maybe we won't get Wind Waker HD and Twilight Princess HD until after Breath of the Wild sequel is out, because they don't want people to be like, oh, well, I'll just play Wind Waker HD instead of Breath of the Wild sequel. Like, seems just outlandish of an idea, right? Like that's so completely off the wall and probably inaccurate. I think that I probably wouldn't even play it. I'd probably just buy it just to have it on my system. But like, you know, I'd play it eventually, but I don't know. Right. There's so much other stuff I need to play right now. But I would be shocked if we don't get that by the end of 2023, especially if Breath of the Wild sequel hits that spring release window that they have right now.
Exactly. And like, and just speaking to the Breath of the Wild sequel, I like nothing's stopping that game, you know, like nothing, nothing's like getting in the way of that game's success. I it's going to be massive when it drops. Yeah. Right.
So I mean, it's the sequel to one of the greatest, most beloved games of all time.
Exactly.
And people are just over the moon about it. You see how it happens every single time there's a Nintendo Direct. People are freaking out. Are we going to get another like 2 second glimpse at Breath of the Wild sequel? Are we going to get the name this time? Like, the name of Breath of the Wild sequel is like one of the longest running mysteries in the industry currently like we know is going to get resolved at some point. Like, we may never find out what happened exactly to like Half-Life 3, which, you know, that's a long running mystery. But we know we're going to get some resolution to Breath of the Wild sequel and what its name is going to be, because they're being so cagey about it. It's only raising the mystique.
Exactly. Like I said, I don't have a lot of experience with Zelda games, but I just feels like the mystery behind it literally would probably have something to do with the story that maybe like fans of the franchise could immediately recognize, you know, like it could be like a, like that kind of mystery surrounding it could be like a huge deal when it finally does come out. So I guess that's my assumption when it comes down to it. I think there's going to be like some keywords in that title when they announce it that people are gonna be like, oh my god, like that's from this game like 10 years ago or something, you know. So
they already said that the reason that they haven't announced the name is it does give a little bit away about the story.
Gotcha. There you go.
I have a feeling that like when we do find out, it's going to be pretty close to launch. I mean, think about it. We didn't learn about Breath of the Wild as the name until E3 2016, and then the game came out March 2017. So it's like, we didn't find out anything about that game until like 9 months before launch. So we're right around that time right now. If they do hit that spring window. So like, who knows, maybe we'll get like a Zelda focused direct and it'll be like, here's like the first details of Breath of the Wild sequel, and then end with the name and maybe give us a release date. Like, I would be surprised if that doesn't happen before the holiday season. Like, that seems like an obvious one. And then maybe they say, Wind Waker HD and Twilight Princess HD available now.
Oh my gosh, dude. That'd be so cool.
So let's move on to the next news item here, Jay. Earlier this week, you mentioned it when we were talking about when you were last on. We got a Nintendo Switch Sports free title update. And the main attraction is the leg strap accessory now expands to be able to be used in full 4-on-4 and 1-on-1 soccer matches. So how do you feel about that, first of all? Because you were kind of hit or miss on Switch Sports. But how do you feel about being able to use the leg strap accessory for full soccer matches now?
I think, I think it'll be really exhausting. Not in a negative way. Just, you know, I remember doing it just for the one game mode where you, like, I can't remember the name
of
it.
It was a shootout, right?
Yeah, yes, that's it, exactly. And, you know, even then, just being, like, being physical and, like, literally having to move your entire leg, you know, over and over and over again, like, just that physicality of it can be, like, a little draining. So I can see it being, like, more of a workout now if it's, like, in this larger mode that's, like, almost like an arcade soccer game. I don't know. I think I wasn't too sold on it just because of the shootout mode and how it lacked the hyperactivity of the other sports in the game. Mm-hmm. But I'm kind of excited to see how it'll look, you know, just in larger teams and a larger mode in general. I also wasn't too sold on soccer either. So that was, like, one of the game modes that I was like, I was kind of on the fence about. So, but I am very interested to see how it works, like, with more people involved.
I would actually like to see the implementation of the leg strap in other less obvious sports in this game. Mm. Like, imagine sword fighting. I forget what it's, Shambara? Is that
yes.
what it's called?
Mm-hmm.
Imagine that with, like, having to take into account positioning as well. Like, as you move forward or as you move backwards, it tracks your leg.
Oh, that could be dope.
So much of, like, fighting and sword fighting and fencing is about the footwork as well. Mm-hmm. Like, obviously, mm-hmm. it's a lot about, like, your placement of your shots and everything, but footwork is such a huge part of that. And, like, especially when you're getting out of the way or of an incoming strike or positioning yourself for a strike, like, I would like to see it do that. Or maybe volleyball. Like, I mean, that might open a whole can of worms of, like, all right, I jumped to spike and I pushed my fist through the ceiling. That might cause mm-hmm. a problem similar to, like, what we got with the Wii back in the day, where it was like I threw my Wii remote through our plasma TV.
Exactly.
But, like, I feel like there's more they could do with this leg strap accessory beyond just one game in this very specific collection of sports titles.
Yeah, I agree. And even to that point, it might run the gambit of the same thing of destroying your TV, but it could be kind of interesting to see how it would work in tennis or badminton, like actually having control of moving left or right rather than that being like making that a more manual thing rather than it being something that the game itself kind of controls.
I'm just picturing myself trying to run along the baseline in tennis and then bashing my shin directly into my coffee table.
Exactly.
Dude, I would destroy my leg if I had to do that in my living room. Are you kidding me? But yeah, for people who have space and people who have high ceilings, those all sound like great ideas. But that was not the only thing that this free title update gave us. You also have new moves available in volleyball now. So I don't know what these moves do, but you can do slide attack and rocket serve. So if you liked volleyball, you can go do that now.
Oh yeah.
And then you'd mentioned that, like, one of the things that, like, was difficult about reviewing Nintendo Switch Sports was that a lot of the online stuff was offline until the game launched.
Right.
They added new ranks online, and that includes S rank and Infinity rank, and that's for, like, the most elite players.
Oh my goodness.
Go up there and try to test their might against the best other players in the world. So, free title update available now for Nintendo Switch Sports. It sounds like it's a good start, and we're supposed to get one later this year that includes golf, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, I mean, I don't know how you'd use the leg strap accessory for that unless they introduce, like, a super rush mode like they have in Mario Golf, where you actually have to, like, sprint after your ball. Screw it. Let's just turn Nintendo Switch Sports into Wii Fit Adventure 2 or Ring Fit Adventure 2. Let's just do that. Let's make this a full body workout every single game you play.
Oh my God.
Dude, I'm in. So we just had San Diego Comic-Con, and there was a lot of news to break down outside of video games, but we did get one big video game announcement, and that is Nickelodeon and Konami gave us a release date for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the Cowabunga Collection.
Mm.
Are you hyped at all for this package?
I mean, I've never played a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles game before.
Oh,
I watched, you know, here's what I will say. I am a fan of just, like, the property itself. I remember watching the cartoons on Fox 5 Saturday morning. Oh my gosh, dude. I remember that and just really, really loving it. So, but I remember Marcus reviewed the recent
Shredder's Revenge.
Shredder's Revenge, and he really liked it, if I remember correctly.
Dude, I'm bringing up my Game of the Year list right now. I keep a running list as the year goes on. It's currently my number two game of the year.
Oh my gosh, really?
It's so good. If you like side-scroller beat-em-ups, like
I do,
it's about as good as it gets. And then layer on the TMNT nostalgia, mm-hmm. and it's almost perfect. Like, the only thing beating it out right now is Pokemon Legends Arceus, which I loved.
Interesting. So, is that your game of the year right now? Sorry.
Yeah, so far. I'm not a big Elden Ring guy, so like that's lower on my list. But
gotcha.
You know, Pokemon Legends Arceus, I adore that game. I mean, there's a long way to go for this year. We have, you know, just under half the year still to go, and we have the busy season kind of coming upon us here.
Mm-hmm.
But Shredder's Revenge and Kirby and the Forgotten Land are right up there with it. So I would highly recommend Shredder's Revenge if you like side-scrolling beat-em-ups and you have an affinity for the franchise.
Okay. Yeah. But, thank you. That sounds great.
So for people who have an affinity for the old TMNT games, though, the Cowabunga Collection gets 13 classic games together in one package. So, and of those games, they've added online functionality for four of them. So those include the 89 arcade game, Turtles in Time's arcade version, Hyperstone Heist, which is the Sega Genesis, basically variation of Turtles in Time, mm-hmm. and then the Super Nintendo version of Tournament Fighters, which was the 2D fighting game that they put out in the 90s. Mm. All of those are great selections. I'm kind of bummed that the SNES version of Turtles in Time doesn't have online functionality because that's the superior version, but the arcade version is great as well. But it's coming to pretty much every platform, including Switch, on August 30th. So that's something that I'm really excited for, having played through Shredder's Revenge on multiple platforms. Now I have it on Xbox and on Switch, mm-hmm. waiting for that crossplay to go into effect. Right now it's only crossplay between Xbox and PC, but they have plans to make it crossplay across Switch and PlayStation and the other consoles as well. So, yeah, I cannot wait for Cowabunga Collection. It's being done, I believe, by Digital Eclipse as well, which they are just the masters of kind of like the retro revival and the retro like collection. So I am so on board with this one. And, you know, I grew up playing Turtles in Time and the 89 arcade game and the NES game for all of its flaws. I have a soft spot in my heart for it. So, yeah, that comes out August 30th and I have that circled on my calendar now.
Very nice.
So, Jay, what is your history with the Mario Kart franchise?
The Mario Kart franchise, I mean, here's another wild thing. I've never owned a Mario Kart, but I've always played them at, like, parties. I remember when I was a kid, all of my Nintendo memories are literally just memories of just being somewhere else and playing these games. But
disassociating.
Imagine. What's it called? I remember being a kid. Oh man, this was like the best birthday party ever. My buddy's birthday party, he like rented out like this lounge / arcade room. I mean, he didn't, his parents did, you know, we were like fifth grade or something. And I remember playing like Mario Kart, and I remember, this is a completely side thing. I remember playing like Tekken. It was wild. There were just like these TVs everywhere and like lava lamps and stuff. But yeah, I just remember loving Mario Kart. And whatnot, yeah.
But do you remember which one it was?
I don't remember which one.
Okay, so you don't remember if it was like a GameCube controller or an N64 controller?
It might have been a GameCube controller, honestly.
Okay, so you were probably playing Double Dash. What I love about this expansion pass, or the Booster Course expansion that they call it, for Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, is we already had 48 tracks in Mario Kart 8 Deluxe. And a lot of those were remakes of old Mario Kart games. I have a lot of love and affection for the Mario Kart franchise. That was a game that I played a lot with my dad back in the 90s. We played Super Nintendo, Super Mario Kart back in the day. And then we played the N64 version together. And then he kind of fell off of gaming with the N64 because the controller was a little bit too complicated for him.
Gotcha.
But he's gotten back into gaming a little bit. And every once in a while, when I go visit, I'll bring my Switch and we'll play Mario Kart 8 Deluxe together. But it's nice that they're putting out all these remakes, like all these remade courses through this expansion that they're doing. So the way that it works is that they announced it earlier this year and they're doing it in six waves. And each wave has 8 courses, and they're scheduled to come out by the end of 2023. So by the end of 2023, we'll have 48 new courses. The number of courses in Mario Kart 8 Deluxe will have doubled by the end of 2023.
Incredible.
So wave one came out in March. I believe it was the 18th. Mm-hmm. And they just announced, hours before we recorded. So we just got it in under the buzzer here. August 4th is wave two. Yeah. And we're getting 8 new courses, same as before. And we have 2 stages from Mario Kart Tour, which is the mobile game. And people are going to crap all over that because, oh, it's the mobile game. Like, nobody plays that. Nobody likes that. Mm-hmm. I will say that if Wave 1, 2 of the best courses on there were from the mobile game. So they're being selective and they're choosing some of the better courses from that. I'm excited for this. So there's 2 cups. There's Turnip Cup and Propeller Cup that are being added. The first one is Turnip Cup. It has New York Minute from Mario Kart Tour, Mario Circuit 3 from Super Mario Kart, Calamari Desert, which is one of my absolute favorite race courses in the Mario Kart franchise, from N64. That's the one, for people who aren't aware, that has like the train going around it. I love that course so much. One of my favorites. Waluigi Pinball from DS. So those are the 4 for Turnip Cup. And then we also have the Propeller Cup, which is Sydney Sprint from Tour, Snowland from Game Boy Advance, Mushroom Gorge from Wii, and then an all new level, which I did not expect. I thought we were only getting remade courses, but we're getting one called Sky High Sunday. And that's an all new track that they made for this booster course.
That's awesome.
Expansion. So I'm excited for it. And that comes out August 4th, just to reiterate there. So I'm imagining that we're getting, like, what is that? 5 months. So every 5 months, that's kind of like the cadence they're giving it to us. Mm-hmm. And it's $25 for the full pass. That includes all 48 courses, or it's included with the Nintendo Switch Online expansion pack, which is how I play it. But yeah, I'm excited for that.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's a lot of content. I mean, I know that's like marketing language, but like, no, that's like really solid. Holy cow. That game's getting like a lot of support. That's great.
Well, I don't know if Animal Crossing has passed it yet, but as of earlier this year, Mario Kart 8 Deluxe is the highest selling Switch game.
Right, right. I think so, I remember. Yeah, I remember
reading that. They already have like such a huge install base, and they want to push this expansion pack. But also they're like, all right, well, if somebody doesn't want to subscribe to that, they can also pay $25 and we'll make more revenue off of this already massive pre-existing player base.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes a ton of sense that they would do this. I'm actually wondering what took them so long, because they could have just raked in the dough when like this game was at its peak. But I guess this is probably revitalizing the community, because like, it's the best Mario Kart game, just hands down. It's so much fun. And I'm super happy that this is happening, because it has the best mechanics of any Mario Kart game. It already has a huge selection of courses, and now it's growing even bigger. So we're going to end on this. Our tradition has typically been to start with Pokemon news, because quite frankly, there's almost always something to talk about with that franchise. But this week we are actually going to end with some quick Pokemon news. The Pokemon Company released an orchestral version of the Pokemon Scarlet and Violet theme on its Japanese YouTube page. Mm-hmm. And it also showed off some plushies featuring the 3 starters from Pokemon Scarlet and Violet that I'm assuming we can buy soon. And you might be asking, well, why are we ending on this? Well, Jay, it's because it's the perfect lead-in to our break, because we're just going to play the version that they posted into break. So
nice.
Enjoy that orchestral version of the Pokemon theme. And when we return, I am going to get Jay's full review of Xenoblade Chronicles 3. We will be right back. It seems like just last week we were celebrating the launch of a highly anticipated RPG launching on Switch. And maybe that's because we were. Live Alive just came out last week, and it seems like it was an absolute blast to play through. If you missed that review on last week's episode, go listen to why that game is so cool, as told by Andrew Reiner, who reviewed it for us. But this week we are shifting our focus to an even bigger role-playing game, Xenoblade Chronicles 3. So, Jay, this is a game series I've never actually been into, but you've spent tens of hours playing through Xenoblade Chronicles 3, and I'm excited to hear what you think. So first off, talk to me a little bit about what the premise of this story is.
Sure, absolutely. So this game takes place in a world called Ionios. And in that world, there are two nations at war, the Kevis and the Agnes. And the soldiers that fight for both of those factions have 10-year lifespans, which they call terms, right? And so by the end of these terms, the idea is that you return to the queen of your respective nation, and you're sort of sent off, like, through this really, like, beautiful flute music. You're kind of sent off, and you've sort of earned the right to transcend to a higher plane. But, of course, 10 years in constant war is incredibly dangerous, and so you could die before that time as well. And so we meet the main characters of Xenoblade Chronicles 3, and that's Noah, Yuni, and Lance, who are soldiers for the Kevis, and Mio, Tion, and Senna, who are soldiers for the Agnes. We meet them on the battlefield, fighting one another. And in all that chaos, they're sort of directed towards a new enemy, right? An enemy that could be behind this conflict, this war that's been going on for years. And so within that battle, the six sort of decide to band together, defeat that unknown enemy, or find out who that enemy is, and then also create new reasons to live. So it's a pretty heartfelt premise, like, right out the gates, and it deals with some pretty heavy themes as well, like trauma through war, like prejudice between the two nations and whatnot. So yeah, that's kind of the central premise.
Do you think that premise delivers?
Sadly, I do not. And that was my biggest gripe with this game. I wanted to love it. I really did, but I just couldn't get past the story and its characters. And I talked a little bit about this on the GI show, but this game has sort of a similar premise to Tales of Arise, which came out last year, and I absolutely loved that game. And you know, a lot of media in general, right? You have these heavy themes, and you know, stories sort of, you know, teeter and totter. They can stumble on those heavy themes, or maybe not do them justice. But where Tales of Arise kind of fell through on some of its premise, some of its themes, it made up for it with these really great, distinctive characters with their own really personal and super emotional and relatable backstories. And for me, Xenoblade Chronicles just 3 just didn't have that. I spent a lot of time trying to really figure out who they were outside of noble, pure-hearted hero, or self-confident but actually really insecure anti-hero, and like they felt like caricatures the whole time. And so it lacked the character nuance that I'd want from, you know, a 100-hour long game. And well, it felt like a slog because of it. But yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
So we look at games that, you know, you and I both love games like Persona 5.
Right.
And the Persona series, it is known for its characters. It has such great characters, amazing cast. Like, that extends all the way through the Persona series. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's one thing you really need to nail to have an RPG experience, because you spend so much time with those characters. And like, if you have an unrelatable cast of characters, you can't really like feel the impact of the story. Like, that's why I love Final Fantasy X so much, and I like Final Fantasy 15 so much, because those characters, they're, I mean, even though Noctis is a prince, like, he's still a relatable character. He's on a road trip with his friends, so it's like, you can relate to those themes. Are there at least like redeeming themes and qualities to the dynamic of this group?
Gosh, I don't know, Shay. It was really hard for me to like any of them, if I'm being honest with you. I mean, there are, you know, really, like, there are heart-to-heart moments, like the little moments that make, you know, games like Persona, games like Final Fantasy 15 so strong, right? Those little moments between characters by a campfire or something, right? There are moments like that, for sure. But I don't know, something for me about those moments felt super hollow. And for me, a lot of the character-defining moments where you would expect a character to change or be dynamic in some shape or form, those moments did happen, but for me, it just felt like the characters weren't changing at all. They were kind of the same the whole way through, despite the odds that they were up against. And so really, it just, it was really hard for me to enjoy any of the interactions that characters had between each other. It was hard for me to enjoy story beats too. For instance, I can give like a it's not much of a spoiler. I'm not even going to really say much about any of the character names, but they're on more than one occasion, right? The idea is that you have these six characters moving through this world. Both of these sides have been fighting one another. They both hate each other because both sides have killed friends on both sides, right? And so you have situations where these characters are moving through this world and interacting with soldiers from the Kevis and the Agnes. And the idea is like, okay, you know, I don't trust you, right? Because you're a traitor. You're working, you're in cahoots with the enemy. And on multiple occasions, you know, you do maybe a fetch quest or you fight a boss, and somehow by the end of that, these characters that were so filled with hatred accept you and they're on your side now. And it was so unconvincing on multiple occasions that you're going around changing these people, but you're not doing much to change them in the first place. And so when that happens, those heavy themes, right? Those heavy themes of like racism and hatred and that kind of rhetoric that these characters want to overcome, those themes just fall flat, right? And it feels like there were no stakes in the first place. And that happens on quite a few occasions. And each time it's more exhausting than the one before it.
Was it Kylie Jenner who gave the police a Coke or a Pepsi or something?
Ooh, you remember that one. Yikes. Yeah,
I mean, that's basically what it sounds like they're doing. It's like, oh, you brought me Starbucks. Cool. Now I'll fight for you despite you killing my friends.
Yeah, there are occasions where it's hard for me to even explain this because you can't even reconcile it. But there were some moments where characters feigned the fact that they disliked you so that later they could be like, ha, I was just testing your resolve. Actually, we've accepted you since the beginning. And it's like, bro, what? Like, I couldn't believe it. And it happened twice. Like, oh my goodness. That's as far as I'm going to go with that example. Well, but
that's unfortunate. Because like a bad story or like a forced like character dynamic or party dynamic can really drag down an RPG. But something that can kind of salvage a little bit here is if the combat is good. So how does that feel?
Oh, I loved the combat in Xenoblade Chronicles 3. I loved it. It's a real-time battle system. So you have your auto attacks, right? But then you have arts, which are, you know, just stronger abilities that you can use that are mapped to the face buttons on the controller, right? And so you can chain these arts into one another. And so combat has this really nice rhythmic cadence to it that's super approachable and accessible for like any type of players who have been playing Xenoblade since the first one or players that are brand new to it. You can take control of the six characters on the fly, just switch each of them in the middle of battle so that it gets pretty chaotic. But once you sort of get used to their classes, which fall under the heavy guard, tanks, attackers, DPS, and healer support, once you sort of get a nice grasp on how those classes work in tandem, you can figure out who to switch to when you need like this huge AoE heal, who to switch to when you want to draw some aggro from this boss, or who to switch to if you want to go behind and get like a nice crit hit from the back. And so yeah, it's really, really fun. But it gets even more fun when you take into account that in the middle of battle, depending on you filling up these specific gauges, you can immediately fuse with another member in the squad to become this humanoid mech called an Ouroboros, and it's about as Evangelion / Gundam as it gets. It's really, really cool. You're mowing down enemies. You're not really taking any damage. You're kind of just building up this this bar, and then once the bar fills, you're back to normal. But I just remember using it tactically as much as possible. So like, you know, we're fighting a boss and it's just dishing out crazy damage and it looks like everybody's gonna die. We can immediately just fuse into our Ouroboros, hopefully, you know, if the gauge is filled up. And once we're in our Ouroboroses, we don't take any damage. And so kind of just like going back and forth, seesawing off of that, you can elongate fights, but also stay alive as well.
How OP are the Ouroboros?
So what's really cool about the Ouroboros is that it has its own skill tree. So in the beginning, it's like, it feels powerful, but it's not like, it doesn't like define the battle, right? Like you'll hop into it and you get this really cool power trip, like specifically against like a boss or something. And you'll feel like you like match evenly with the boss, but it's not something that immediately like defines like a win condition or anything like that. And it doesn't usually last long enough for you to completely destroy an enemy. So at the end of it, it felt like this safe way to dish out damage without taking much damage myself. It also felt like a really great way to close out fights, because the gauge fills up to like level 3. And once you get it to level 3, you're even stronger in that sense. So it felt more important for me to just wait for it to go up to the highest max, and then transform rather than doing it immediately, unless, you know, I needed to use it as like a get out of jail card. But there is another really cool aspect to combat, and it's called chain attacks. And it's very similar. It has its own gauge and everything that you have to build up. And then once you activate it, it sort of slows down time, and it starts this mini game where you can choose characters in sequence and use their arts and chain those arts, and you build this damage modifier. But you're also at the same time, there's like this mini game underneath where you have to build like 100 points based on the attacks you do per round. And if you exceed that threshold, you can keep going. And so the idea is that you can do this chain attack for, you know, full on minutes in a fight. And it's this really awesome cutscene, where everybody's like doing their special attacks and everything. And that was also another fun way of having like a power trip in the middle of battle. So there's so much to do. There's a lot of micromanagement, because it is a JRPG, but in very Xenoblade Chronicles fashion, this stuff is sort of sprinkled like piecemeal throughout the game itself. So you never feel as if it's super overwhelming with all these different mechanics at one time. It's nice and balanced throughout the entire story. So yeah.
And speaking of balance, like you have a lot of characters that you kind of have to juggle here. So it, right. it intrigued me because you have 6 main characters in your party, and then there's an extra 7th slot where you can recruit different characters throughout the world. Can you talk to me about like that system and kind of how you can progress your party?
Sure, absolutely. So you have your 6 main characters, and they all have their own classes. And what's really cool about class progression is that your classes just level up from being used, sort of just like how your XP, like you would just level up normally, like your main character's experience bars and everything. But each character can learn any class in the game, which is nice too. So you can sort of experiment
with
different combinations. Yeah. It's like really, for me, it was the coolest part of the combat, just being able to switch out any character on the fly to any class I wanted, maxing out those classes and then moving on to a new one. And then what's also really cool, like you said, you have your 7th hero character, and usually the heroes, at least for me, they felt like hybrids. They like, you know, you'd get a healer, but who also did a lot of DPS, or you'd get a heavy guard who could also like do like some healing as well. And so your main cast can also learn those classes as well. And so, you know, sometimes you could go in with like 4 DPS or something like that, right? And then like 3 supports, maybe skip out on aggro, which, you know, I wouldn't recommend, but if you're doing a lot of damage all at once, you might be able to counteract not having tanks in your squad or anything like that.
Dude, so, I love like theory crafting like that, where it's just kind of like, how can I exploit this system with all the flexibility they give me? Like, that's what I liked about like the late game of like Final Fantasy X, or something like the team's structure of Final Fantasy 13, where you can kind of just like, all right, I want to have like these 2 synergists, and then this person full on, I forget what like the actual term is, but like DPS basically,
right.
The synergists are boosting the DPS person and like increasing the stagger gauge and stuff like that, where it's like, all right, I think I found the loophole that like the developers kind of gave us with all this flexibility. I really love that type of approach that RPG developers sometimes give you. So I'm really happy to hear that that's what seems to be the case in Xeno 3.
Yeah, it's the combat is a lot of fun. Like I said, there's this really nice cadence to it. It can run the gambit of you sort of turning off your brain when it happens. Like there are definitely like multiple times where, you know, you might throw on an accessory that ups your auto attack like by like a really high percentage, and then you just wind up sitting there and forgetting that, like, oh yeah, I could also like press these like talent like face buttons here too and stuff like that, because you're just doing so much damage with your auto attacks. So it can run the risk of, you know, you sort of like falling, like completely losing like attention on what's going on and everything like that. But it is a lot of fun, especially in those really, really hard legendary boss battles where you're switching to different roles on the fly. You're calling out party commands to group up so you can do like a full-on buff or a full heal. You're hopping, like you have the computer characters, the AI fusing, and they're their own Ouroboros, and you're over here healing. You're like, you know, it's wild. It's super chaotic, but it feels like really controlled at the same time. It's just this really interesting hybrid quality to it of that chaos and control that I really enjoyed.
Wow. Well, I mean, it sounds like the action is solid in all the ways that it needs to be.
Right.
One other element that I think is just, you're unable to overlook it, is the world when it comes to a big RPG such as this. How does this world feel to you? Did you feel kind of compelled to explore every nook and cranny as you played through it? Did you feel rewarded for your exploration? Or was it kind of just like a point A to point B type of situation?
Interesting. So early on, I wanted to explore every nook and cranny of the world just to get a better understanding of how dynamic it was. And unfortunately, you know, after playing through the first couple of chapters, I realized that it's an open zone game where you're moving from zone to zone, but there's just not much going on within those zones. There are a lot of like not like really like shoddy textures up close, so that makes, you know, appreciating like the visual quality of the world, it makes that pretty challenging. On top of that, there's mainly just monsters sort of sprinkled throughout these zones, and that's sort of what fills them up. And then on top of that, there are these like little floaty like item sprites that you can run over, and when you suck them in, you get an item on your screen. But that's really it, truly. There's not much else going on in the world. A lot of the quests are fetch quests, and some of those quests are just picking up the items that are just in the zones, and those items are randomized and they always respawn. And so you might be running around looking for an item for a long time, and just doing that in an already hollow, empty world, it sort of sucks the life out of the experience. I don't know, like some of these open zones took hours to explore fully, just so that at the end of the day I got a couple of new items, but there were no real, you know, interesting missions for me to do outside of recruiting the heroes along the way. But even those ended up being like, okay, do fetch quests for people in this camp, or fight this boss. You know, it didn't feel like I was interacting with the world in very meaningful ways at all. And you know, that can be, at least for some RPG fans, that can be a little egregious, right? Because you want to be able to interact with this very dynamic world. You want to feel, you want the world to feel alive as you move through it. And that was just not something I felt when I was moving through Ionios in this game. So.
Well, hopefully they remedy this a little bit with, because some news that just came out earlier this week, some minor news, the developers were doing a Q&A with Nintendo, and they said that they're going to put out an expansion that's approximately the size of Xenoblade Chronicles 2, or Xenoblade Chronicles 2's Torna the Golden Country,
right.
Which is massive. Like, do you think there's any chance they can kind of remedy some of these problems through a giant expansion like that?
Yeah, I hope so. But then again, right, it's still the issue of the story and the characters too, right? You're moving through these empty worlds, but you're also not enjoying the people you're inhabiting while moving through these empty worlds. So there's still a lot of other things that could raise more, like, that could raise issues with players as well. But you know, I hope like an expansion could really make the world feel more alive, even if they plan on including other zones or other entire continents that you can travel to. I think it just depends on the activities that you can do within those spaces. And right now, the activities that you do within Xenoblade Chronicles 3 are they're nothing that we haven't seen before. And in some cases, they're just not very fun to do at all.
Mm. And I'm a huge fan of video game music. And, you know, I have to say, from what I've heard, I've really enjoyed the Xenoblade Chronicles 3 soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
And I think RPGs just always, I mean, a lot of good RPGs anyway, have just unbelievable soundtracks.
Right.
Do you feel that Xenoblade Chronicles 3 kind of is up there in like the RPG soundtrack world?
I enjoyed the soundtrack a lot. But, you know, this isn't, if I'm going to be honest, it's not, you know, a Final Fantasy 13. It's not a Final Fantasy 7. It's you know, you're not going to like walk away from the soundtrack feeling particularly changed in any way. But it is definitely, it is something I've caught myself humming along to. I do wish there was more variety in the combat music. That kind of grew old pretty quickly.
So you have to, I mean, that's always a big sticking point, right? Because like mm-hmm. the combat music always, you hear it so much. And like certain games like Persona 5 and Persona 4, they do like, they just have such amazing
right.
soundtracks that it almost doesn't matter.
Right.
But like other games, you feel like you're going to be tearing your hair out every time you hear it. And it's like, all right, I just need to mute this because I'm so sick of random encounters or like fighting just random minions.
Mm-hmm.
And hearing the same song over and over and over again. But yeah, if they don't nail the battle theme, you're probably going to be in for a long play session there.
Yeah, I agree. It's funny. When I was working on the review, I remember I was looking at some of the other Xeno reviews, and I was reading through Miller's review on you know, Xenoblade Chronicles X. And he did not like the soundtrack at all. I think he talked about how there were like some songs with lyrics in them and how it was like it was pretty embarrassing. And so I went and listened to that on YouTube, and yeah, I mean, it made me appreciate Xenoblade Chronicles 3's music even more.
Yeah, I think
so that, I suppose
yeah.
it could be worse.
I remember him talking about the music like while he was reviewing it, and he's like, I just can't do it anymore. I just can't listen to this song anymore. Just I guess it was like a really terrible rap.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Yeah. So I gave you an appreciation for Xenoblade Chronicles 3, which you gave a 7.25 out of 10.
Yes.
So first of all, how dare you? And second of all, how would you go about recommending this game to someone? Like if somebody was like, hey, like I like RPGs. Yeah. What should I check out Xenoblade Chronicles 3? How would you respond to that?
I would say that if you are an RPG fan that's really into character progression, and I'm not talking about specifically character progression and narrative, I'm just talking about with mechanics and systems. If you're an RPG lover that really appreciates super nuanced dynamic combat, then Xenoblade Chronicles 3 really might scratch that itch for you. But if you're looking for a 100 to 150 hour long incredible odyssey with super affecting characters and this really, really deep three-dimensional story, then I'm not sure if the combat and character progression could make up for it missing those things.
And if you want to read Jay's full review, you can do so on GameInformer.com. We are going to take one final break for this episode, and when we get back, we're going to talk definitive ranking and get Jay's eShop Gem of the Week. We will be right back. We are back, and it is time for definitive ranking, a recurring segment where we take a Nintendo topic and give our personal top five lists. Since this episode was largely about Xenoblade Chronicles 3 and Jay was not absolutely in love with it, I wanted to get some recommendations to the people who are looking for some great RPGs to play on Switch. So Jay, I want to get your top five RPGs either currently on or announced for Switch. So I'll let
sure.
you go first, start with five, count it down to one, and just give me like a brief sentence or two about each one.
Sure, absolutely. So, you know, might have a couple people rolling their eyes at five, but I'm just going to say it. Skyrim, I don't really know if I need to say anything more than that. I mean, Skyrim to this day still holds up as one of the greatest RPGs of all time. And I think, you know, obviously it's been re-released multiple times, but it is still nice to be able to play that on the go.
Multiple times is an understatement.
Exactly. Number four, since this is Xenoblade Chronicles week and we've been talking about it, I think everyone should go out and play Xenoblade Chronicles, the definitive edition of the first game. It's the one that really kind of started it all, and it still holds up. There's some really nice quality of life changes in the definitive edition. And yeah, if you are looking for really solid combat, if you're looking for really really solid characters, I would say check out the first game. Now, moving on to number three. This might be a little controversial, but my favorite Final Fantasy, Final Fantasy 12, the Zodiac Age. I know a lot of people aren't huge fans of Final Fantasy 12, but there's something about its sort of steampunk vibes that I couldn't get past. It has like the steampunk vibes, it has the medieval vibes in it, it has some sci-fi in there. It's just a bunch of things all just wrapped in one with this really epic story that feels like, I don't know, Lord of the Rings or Star Wars levels of nuts and insane. So I've always been a huge fan of Final Fantasy XII, the Zodiac Age, and I hope everyone goes out and gives it a shot. My number two and number one were really hard because my number two should be my number one, but I think objectively my number one should be my number one. I don't know if that made any sense, but here we go. Number two is Nier Automata, which is arguably my favorite game of all time. Wow. And it was really hard putting it at number two. There are definitely things in that game, like some really experimental ideas that don't land. But I think its story and some of its gameplay, how the gameplay is really an homage to a lot of like arcade genres. It has like incredible hack and slash mechanics from Platinum Games and everything. Nier Automata is just one of the greatest games I've ever played, and I still think about it almost every day. But like I said,
that's not coming until October 6th, but since it is announced, that is valid for this list, October 6th of this year.
Right. And, you know, and objectively, like I said, my first pick should be my first pick. And like you said, October is a great month for RPGs because Persona 5 Royal will be on Switch.
Yes.
And man, Nier Automata is my favorite game of all time. Persona 5 Royal is the greatest JRPG I think I have ever played. And everyone needs to play that game. If you love RPGs, Western or Japanese RPGs, doesn't matter. You need to play Persona 5 Royal. Persona 5 was already an incredible game with amazing characters, this super long but amazing story. Royal just sort of throws on like another 20 hours and they're still really good. It wasn't long enough, man. And one of like the most amazing like final boss sequences I've ever played. Oh man, I can't talk enough about that game. Definitely go out and check Persona 5 and Nier when they come out in August. It's a really good October. Thank you. When they come out in October, it's a really good month for those games, for RPGs in general on the Switch in October. So
Yeah. It's really great. It's a really great month for RPGs that came out in 2017.
Exactly. There you go.
Minor overlap here. Just one entry, actually, overlapping.
Oh, really?
So honorable mention, The Witcher 3, one of the greatest RPGs of all time. I just want to say it's an absolute marvel that they got that running on a Switch.
Yep.
But don't play that on Switch unless you absolutely have to, unless you really want that game on the go and you don't have a Steam Deck. Like, play that on Xbox or PlayStation or PC. Like, that's a game that you want the actual experience, not some compromised version that is the Switch version. Again, it's an absolute incredible game, and it's a game that everybody should play. So if this is your only option, play The Witcher 3. And then another honorable mention, I just started Live Alive last night, and I'm having a really good time with it. Not enough to really judge it to be on this list. So
okay.
Here's my list. I'm going to go quick. Number five, Golf Story. It was an early title on the Switch, and it's a very small indie game that I think caught a lot of people off guard. It's an RPG based around playing golf. And it's such a fun game. I never expected that would be a fun concoction, but there's a sequel announced that people are really excited for called Sports Story that I'm assuming is going to expand into a whole bunch of other games. But it uses a lot of like retro golf video game mechanics, which are really fun. And then also like kind of some zany off the wall conventions that really drive home the feel of this game. And it's just a really great time. Number four, Fire Emblem Three Houses. I didn't put enough time into this for it to be higher on the list, but from what I have played, it's just a great game. And it's I know it's beloved by so many people, so I wanted to include it on here. Number three, I said it was my game of the year so far, Pokemon Legends Arceus. I wanted to include a Pokemon game of some kind. That is the biggest RPG series on the Switch. I mean, it's one of the biggest series ever to exist in any entertainment medium, Pokemon. I think Pokemon Legends Arceus is the best game that we've gotten on the Switch. It's better than Let's Go Pikachu and Eevee. It's better than Sword and Shield. I'm excited because this really set the table for Pokemon Scarlet and Violet later this year. But Pokemon Legends Arceus, not a traditional RPG, but definitely an RPG nonetheless. Number two, you knew it was going to come here at some point. Persona 5 Royal comes out October 21st on Switch. Finally going to have an on-the-go version of Persona 5, and it's the upgraded version, so I'm excited about that. And then number one is my favorite RPG of all time, Final Fantasy X.
Yep, I knew
it. Absolutely love it. Yeah, and it's a game that, you know, it's impossible for me to just... I don't know if any RPG will ever top it for me just because this game was so important to me. The only one that really comes close, I would say, I mean, it has been Persona 5 and Pokemon Red and Blue. And again, for the same reasons for Pokemon Red and Blue, because that was kind of like my first RPG I ever really played. And Final Fantasy X was like my entryway into like, oh, this is what like a real RPG is like. but yeah, so Final Fantasy X, my number one RPG on Switch. So Jay, that Very leads nice. Us to the final segment of the show. That is the eShop Gem of the Week. So I'm going to give the floor to you. Give some shine to a game that we would not otherwise cover, maybe.
Absolutely. I'm really excited, actually, to talk about this one. This game, Ape Out. I don't know if any our listeners have heard of it, but it is a top-down beat-em-up where you play as this ape trying to escape its armed captors. But interestingly enough, that's just my interpretation, because there's a narrative there, but it's not told traditionally. And that ambiguity, along with like these randomly generated levels, it sort of makes each playthrough feel personal and even emergent in some aspects. But it's really rhythmic. It's super physical. You know, thuds, like each thud from the ape's punches and then the cracks from the gunshots of the people chasing you around, they sort of meld into this really beautiful jazz soundtrack. It's just incredible. And you know, just on top of that, I love this game so much. It's a super personal game for me, and you know, and that's because, you know, just to shout out some people, some of the folks who worked on that game were my professors, Matt Bach, the composer, and Bennett Foddy, one of the artists. So yeah, just an incredible game. I think everyone should go out and give it a shot. It says so much with no words at all, or little to no words at all, and I think everyone should be playing this game.
And I didn't know you had a personal connection to that. So that's awesome. That's really cool. I mean, I played Ape Out in 2019 when it came out. I think it's only on PC and Switch, which is wild. Like, it's a great game. Like, and all the action, like you said, does play right into the soundtrack. And if I'm not mistaken, I mean, it's been 3 years since I've played it, but all of the levels are kind of laid out like albums, right? Or like the worlds, I guess, or chapters or whatever. So it's like you choose a jazz album to listen to while you play, and each album has corresponding stages and story that you play through.
Right.
And it's so much fun. It's challenging as hell at times.
It is. Yeah. The enemies kill you very quickly. Sorry, go ahead. Yeah.
Oh, it's just a great fun game overall. Leo Vader actually turned me onto it back in the day in 2019, and I can't say enough good things about this game. It's a blast, and it's only $15. You'll definitely get your $15 worth if you like. I would say like it's comparable to Hotline Miami, only
yes,
you're kind of like the monster in it, right? Because you're playing as a giant gorilla that is escaping the captors, and you're so much more powerful, but if they beat you with like the numbers and kind of the unexpected like element of surprise,
right?
So that's what you kind of have to worry about. But like, you know, if you run into an enemy, chances are you're throwing them through a window or into a wall and just splattering them on the wall. So like,
exactly,
it's so much fun in that way. If you like Hotline Miami and like, I'm trying to think of like any, like if you like jazz music, like those are the people I would recommend check out this game. It's a cool power fantasy, even though it's very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's a great call out, Jay. I'm surprised when you said that, I was like, we had to have talked about that already on this show, but no, we have not talked about Ape Out. And I'm so glad that we did, because that was that was one of the best games of 2019, I would say.
I agree completely.
Jay, I think that's an episode.
All right. That's an episode, baby.
Yeah, we made it. Thanks for joining me to give you your review of Xenoblade Chronicles 3 and going over all of the news from the past 2 weeks. And thank you so much to everyone for listening. Do me a favor, if you haven't already, throw All Things Nintendo a 5-star review and subscribe on your podcast platform of choice. And if you have any questions or comments, you can get in touch with me at allthingsnintendo@gameinformer.com or hit me up on Twitter or Instagram at Brian P. Shea. And of course, we always have the Game Informer Community Discord, which is a perk for subscribing to our Twitch channel, even just for 1 month. Jay, where can people follow you on social media?
You can follow me on Twitter at Jason_Guisao. That's G-U-I-S-A-O. You can follow me on Twitter there.
All right, Jay, thank you so much again for joining. That is our show for this week. Thank you all for listening. Take care. We will see you next time.
Bye-bye.